This is Dan Barish, the Jewish liberal from Cleveland.
And this is Matt Shepard, the Mormon conservative from Seattle.
And we are the common ground. So today we're discussing the move by President Obama to normalize relations with Cuba. And since neither of us have ever smoked a cigar, correct, Matt? You have not smoked a cigar?
That is correct, yep.
Uh-huh. And I have not even touched a thing that could be smoked in my life. And since neither of us will ever partake of a Cuban cigar in all likelihood, we don't care. No, joking. So it's an object of contention. Was it a good idea to begin to normalize relations with Cuba? Or should we permanently unfriend an alleged despotic hellhole?
Yeah, it's, you know, at least for me, it's a bit of a mixed bag. I mean, to me, any increase in capitalism in an area is going to help increase freedom. I mean, just look at China. You know, because of the increase in capitalism and the ability to, which includes the getting the internet and greater communication, it is slowly chipping away at the power of their current dictators. I mean, and having Hong Kong in there helps a lot too. China doesn't seem to know what to do with Hong Kong.
Hong Kong appears to be like a virus to China.
Yeah.
How to accommodate freedom of speech within a totalitarian system, knowing that if you disrupt that freedom of speech, you also cause possibly a fantastic disruption of the global economy, which is really a big reason why they can't touch it.
Yeah.
So my feeling about Cuba is this. I profoundly disagree with the fantasy of some on the far left that it's a workers' paradise. That offends me pretty deeply. I mean, I've heard opposing viewpoints on this. A person I know well has traveled to Cuba and saw a cigar factory and found herself on the top floor of the factory where a big strong man stood in the doorway menacingly and the workers couldn't go and the temperature was nearly 100 degrees. So that's obviously a workers' paradise. But on the other hand...
Yeah, totally.
But on the other hand, I also once knew a PhD student in psychology who was working, you know, toward that PhD, and who said, and he was Cuban, and he said Fidel Castro was a genius, but he said he didn't like Raul so much. So both of those are real perspectives, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never been to Cuba myself, but I do know that the American left, the far left, has a bad history when it comes to being too enamored of places they believe fulfill their ideals, such as Stalin's Russia, which obviously didn't fulfill their ideals, but they, to an extent, didn't know better. And so they praised a regime that really didn't need to be praised by anybody. That being said, we've had an embargo on Cuba since President Kennedy, and Fidel Castro has been the bird dog of every U.S. president since Kennedy, and I see no way that we have produced positive change in Cuba by our policy, and so I think maybe it's time for a change. I think if you do something, no matter what your philosophy is, if you as a reasonable person see that, well, I've been doing a thing for the last few decades and it has never produced the result I wanted, maybe I should be flexible and see if a different action will produce the result I desire.
Well, I think in part it has been worked. I mean, it hasn't actually produced the change, but it has, like, it was originally being propped up by the Soviet Union. Soviet Union fell. Recently, it's been actually being propped up by the Venezuelan oil state.
Absolutely, and
but
now
the Venezuelan oil state is under a lot of pressure. The oil state, like, the price of oil has fallen, so Venezuela's under a lot of pressure. So if we keep it up, like, if it's, you know, to me, it's, we either need to crank it up or ratchet it down. And so there's, Obama chose to ratchet it down. I mean, basically, if we were able to, and this would suck for the Cuban people, which is one reason, you know, I'm torn on this. Because I don't want totalitarian states to be in, you know, to be in existence. But the people in Cuba have been in, under this system for so long that, like, you talk to people, they're like, they'll basically say, like, God bless the ration system. Because they've been in it so long. That's how they've grown up. You know, you can't buy something unless you have the little stickers and you're only allowed X amount of rice, which actually has been decreasing over time since the Cuban regime started. Their rations per person have been decreasing over time, to where recently, like, they went down to, it was like a pound of rice per person per week.
Wow.
And that's because of a lot of the pressure that's going on. So, I mean, you know, it's a tough call. And what do we do that's going to increase it? I mean, there's the capitalism shock therapy, where basically it's like, okay, no more no more like totalitarian socialism in Russia. And then now what do? Okay, let's go to capitalism right away.
Right.
There has to be a change in the hearts and minds of the people when you've been dependent upon a big brother for so long. It's difficult for that to change. And so, like I said, any way that we can increase real capitalism in Cuba, I think is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, depending on what the best thing would be, because anybody that believes in capitalism and believes against the state in Cuba is now either imprisoned, hiding it very, very well, or has left on a flotilla.
Right, right.
And so a lot of the people that would resist or would stand up have been stripped from Cuba.
Right. And I think it's time for a change. I think it's worth seeing what lifting the embargo would do. And if more Cubans had the internet to see if dissent would spread. And, as a liberal, I'm honestly curious if we can open up relations with Cuba any more than we have and just simply have citizen-to-citizen talks. I'm curious how happy Cubans truly are under their regimes. I mean, that's an interesting test between conservatives and liberals to me. Is, are you really happy? I mean, I suspect they're not, but that's because I'm sympathetic to the conservative line on Cuba. I'm sympathetic to the idea that under a not really socialist state, people aren't happy. That, random example, my brother taught English in Prague for the better part of a year, and what was really interesting to hear from him was that if you look at the older people in the Czech Republic, the people who grew up under Soviet domination of Czechoslovakia, these are unhappy-looking people. They grew up in deprivation, they grew up in a surveillance state, they don't really trust people, they just look unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
No one should have to be that way.
Yeah. Then again, they've been instilled with Russian values for a while. So, have you known many Russian people?
I've known a few. I once actually outright asked a former citizen of the Soviet Union who was 20-something living in the U.S., what was it like to be a Soviet citizen and then to be an American citizen? And he said the biggest difference for him, he felt, was that people from the Soviet Union were used to expecting the government to provide everything for them, and in the U.S., that's not the way it works, and that's a transition that you have to work through, he said. Mm. He didn't really speak so much about surveillance.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's when the people depend on you, you don't need to surveil them. The reason you need to surveil them is when the people, they don't come to you. When the people are coming to you directly because they want sustenance or they need those things, you don't need to surveil them as much because they'll come to you, as opposed to you having to go and tamp down the pressure on them, which I think is where a lot of the Orwellian stuff is wrong about a totalitarian state. Is there may be some of that in transition, but it would be ratcheted up over time. But you wouldn't need to constantly keep surveilling them once you have them fully dependent upon the government. Then they're going to be lackeys for you. I mean, that's part of Hitler's youth. That's part of the Stalin movement. That's part of the what's the group in China the Red Army in China?
Well, the Red Army is the People's Liberation Army.
There's a group of fighters in China that would citizen fighters that would fight for
There must be something else, not red shirts. I don't know what the terminology is, but it's not red shirts.
Yeah, they're kind of the counterpart to the people that got mowed down in Tahrir Square.
Comparison to Egypt or not. I was confused.
No, not Tahrir Square, Tiananmen Square.
Yes.
Wow, totally mixed up those references there.
But interesting slip of the tongue, yes?
Yeah. Tahrir Square, Tiananmen Square, anyway. So, when it comes down to Cuba, Cuba is a cesspool of, child prostitution. There's a lot of undercurrent of terrible things that go on. There's a lot of oppression in there, and that needs to change.
Yes, it does.
What the best way is, to change it? I mean, you know, Cuba itself can't sustain itself as it is right now. As a nation, as a government, like, they import 80% of their food. They were actually, like, were a net food export before the Fidel regime came into power. But now, like, they're, you know, they have almost no meat available in Cuba. There's no, you know, their production of food is way down.
Right.
You know, it's, you know, so, I mean, it's a terrible thing. I mean, what the best way to go about it is, I mean, it's different than, say, the Soviet Union, which, you know, for them, like, they needed, you know, a couple of things, but, you know, one, a change in the hearts and minds of the people. By, you know, a lot of that had to do with the things of the Iron Lady. What's her name?
You're thinking of Margaret Thatcher.
Margaret Thatcher. I mean, like, Margaret Thatcher, John Paul II, along with a lot of world events that just kind of continued to weigh down on the Soviet era, Ronald Reagan. Like, the America projecting a large amount of strength and the Soviet Union not able to stand on its own legs is kind of what collapsed that regime and has brought about an incredible increase in freedom around the world.
Although it's interesting that the world seems less stable and less full of assumptions, reliable, safe assumptions, now that there's no Soviet Union anymore. The world is not just a battleground between two superpowers any longer. Now you have unstable elements, terrorism, the possibility of nuclear attacks using munitions from the former Soviet Union.
Mm-hmm. Well, probably it's splintered. So we cut out the, like, you know, if you look at it, like, it's metastasized, really. Are you familiar with, like, cancer enough to go into this? Like,
oh, I know all about, well, considering.
So you remove the big tumor. And
my first stepmother died of breast cancer. So yes, I know what metastases are. Yes.
Yeah. So you remove the big tumor and all of the other tiny tumors that have spread around the body then are actually able to start growing again. Because the big tumor, when you have, like, one large mass, it actually suppresses the growth of any other tumors. There's chemicals it sends out, chemical signals it sends out that says, hey, nothing else grow, it's me, I want to grow, basically. And so then now that's gone around the world, and there's large amounts of things that were, you know, either ignored, small enough not to worry about, but they're now starting to grow in lots of places. You know, from ISIS to, you know, all the Al-Qaeda splinter groups to, like, the Chechnya terrorists to, you know, homegrown stuff here. It's becoming much more of homegrown self-radicalized people that, you know, follow the ideologies of, you know, some imam or some preacher or whatever, you know, a la Westboro Baptist Church or something, and, you know, take it into their own hands. And so it has destabilized things, but only because, you know, we're not horrendously sick with cancer. Now it's just around in lots of places. So, I mean, would you rather have one giant tumor or, you know, lots and lots of tiny ones? I don't know.
Can I have an option of no cancer? I don't have any cancer.
I would love that. That would be awesome. I mean, I would love to have no cancer, but as of right now, it's there. Like, there's the ideologies of totalitarianism, of twisted Sharia law, of large amounts of different things are, you know, to, like, the sexual depravity that's, you know, causing the sex slave trade around the world.
Mm-hmm. So, anyway, I hope we're not boring our viewers too completely. I think our consensus on Cuba is that we both think Cuba needs regime change. We both think that perhaps capitalism will open up freedom, particularly with the internet and its growth, the way that it allows information to go unleashed. And we both have maybe a wait-and-see attitude on what will be the effect of this change in policy. Neither of us think it's necessarily a disaster.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to encourage to encourage the regime to last longer. I mean, that's my only fear with this, is that it may prolong its ability to tamp down the freedom of its people. Because if there's they let a little bit of capitalism in. I mean, you know, if there were no capitalism, say, in, like, China would have had a full-scale revolt on its hands because it's, you know, they would have had very little economic growth, you know, since, like, after the, you know, like, there's, like, the Mao days where people were, glorifying things, but like a lot of the peasants and stuff realized this is terrible, and so they had to change things around, had to shift things after Mao died.
Mm-hmm.
To try to contain it, and part of that post Mao era was bringing in bits and bits of capitalism, which is I believe prolonged it. It's probably forestalled a great revolution, which would have been on a horrific scale, trying to overthrow the a la Tiananmen Square. Like, that's basically what the fight would be. But
yes, no, I it's been very interesting to see the way in which China the Chinese regime has attempted to have their cake and eat it too, as one would say, to be a totalitarian government with a free flowing capitalist economy. The attempt to have both of those things at once, including, you know, every once in a while we'll have a seizure of property by eminent domain, but the fact that the communist regime can do it at once with people's property and can just decide, okay, we're going to build the Three Gorges Dam, we're going to flood a huge area. You know, they can just do those things by fiat. And sometimes mm-hmm. American policymakers are almost jealous because they think they know what the right thing would be to do, but they cannot possibly muster the political energy to make it happen.
Yeah, and there's, you know, but when you try to have the elites run things, like, you know, in Soviet era, like, they were trying to set, like, the right price for tennis shoes. They would copy directly prices from, like, a Sears catalog. And try to come up with the right price to charge for, like, different goods and things. But what often happened is they would either charge too much and no one could afford it, or they would charge too little and people would go and buy out all the shoes and then sell them on the black market. You know, which is interesting for, you know, all of that. It's just kind of funny how, like, the free market, as far as, like, setting prices and that sort of thing, is by far the best way to actually get a fair market price.
Mm-hmm.
Surprisingly enough.
Yes.
You try to control that, and it doesn't work very well. Why? Because you have no idea what someone is willing to pay for something. You know, no. I mean, like, ask, like, you know, what the fair market price would be for a smartphone, like, say, 20 years ago. Who would have guessed what the price of a smartphone is? Well, people are really going to be willing to pay $600 for a phone they're going to replace in a year?
Astonishingly enough, yes. Astonishingly enough, yes.
But that's the market. There's also ones that you can buy for $50, you know, or with a 2-year contract, free. You know, it's free addendum. You know, but
right,
and that's the kind of thing that happens with it, is that, you know, yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Also, another thing about Cuba that I learned recently, like, there was a Cuban exile that was mentioning, like, they all know that, like, you buy, like, you, the government gives you, like rationing stamps
mm-hmm.
in Cuba. So you can only buy an X amount of goods, but you don't buy it from the government. You actually have to go to, like, you have to, like, go and buy the food. Like, they don't give it to you. It's not like a Soviet era. You actually, like, pay money for it. But, like, you take those in, and, they'll sell you a certain amount of goods, but most of the sellers have, like, bum weights. So they actually give you less food than you're actually getting. Like, they'll measure out the rice. Like, you get a pound of rice, but it'll actually be like 3/4 of a pound, you know? And so, like, there's corruption in that amount, in that way too, you know, down on the lower levels as well, which, you know, when you live in a totalitarian state and, you know, you try and report, like, the person that's selling you food, and they just say, "Hey, I'm not, it's this person," then they'll take you off and, you know, either put you in prison or take you mm-hmm. to a firing squad. There's a heavy amount of, like, an incentive for corruption, and there's a disincentive for, like, ousting mm-hmm. that corruption when you have that totalitarian state. Someone has the favor of somebody or is in a position of power, there's not much you can do about it.
Indeed. So anyway, I think we're on our common ground if we didn't agree even from the beginning. So
yeah.
It totalitarianism does. It does. Sucks. Get rid of it. Throw it out. Get it.
However, we can
kill
do
it,
that.
Kill it. Fill it with holes. Kill it. Kill it. Kill it. Yay!
Dead. Exactly.
All right. So, that's your Christmas message / Hanukkah message / Kwanzaa message / Festivus message from the common ground. Totalitarianism is bad. And if you disagree with us, we will have you hauled out to our interfaith, interpolitical belief firing squad and kill you. Wait, what?
Happy Ramahana Kwanzmas?
Happy all beliefs gift-giving season, and if you disagree, we'll kill you. Anyway, this is Dan Bersh, the Jewish liberal from Cleveland, who will not kill you for agreeing with him, signing off.
And this is Matt Shepard, the Mormon conservative from Seattle, signing off.